How is Kentucky doing economically compared to other states? Do we find meaning and purpose in our work? And what does it look like to have a healthy economy and flourishing people? Hi, this is Richard Nelson, host of The Commonwealth Matters. According to the statistics, Kentucky isn't doing very well. Low workforce participation, poor mental health, various forms of addiction, lack of meaning and purpose in the lives of too many Kentuckians are hurting not just individuals, but our communities. On this program, I'm going to talk about the challenges and then elements for a successful and healthy economy. So let's start with the challenges. There's 8 different challenges that I want to focus on. Then I'm going to pivot over to opportunities and then a vision cast by the Commonwealth Policy Center. So several of the current challenges that we're facing in our economy and with the workforce are considerations that were brought forth in David Bahnsen's important book called Full Time, Work in the Meaning of Life. I had a chance to interview David not too long ago. He was on the Commonwealth Matters program, and he brings some really powerful insights and an important worldview into this question of economy and work. So let's start with the first challenge that David Bahnsen brought forward, and it's one that I really agree with. And this challenge is the prevailing view of work. And the prevailing view today in the United States is that work is something that you do in order to get the things that you really want to do, like the weekend, a vacation, shopping trips, etc., in order for us to consume. So work is purely pragmatic. It's something that you're trading your time for in order to get something that you really want. Secondly, the second challenge is that we have a crisis of workforce participation. Today in the United States, 1 out of 6 prime working age men, this is the age of 25 to 54, are out of the workforce. 40% of these men have college degrees. They're simply not working. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, as of 2021, Kentucky's labor force participation rate was 57.4%. Now, that's pretty low to have some 43% roughly of Kentuckians who are able to work and not in the workforce. Now, this means that we are only ahead of 6 other states: South Carolina, Arkansas, Alabama, New Mexico, Mississippi, and West Virginia. Those are the only states that have a lower workforce participation rate. In Kentucky, to break that down a little further, those aged between 35 to 44, 82% participation rate in the labor force. And then you look at the 45 to 54 age group, it's 75% participating. So another part of the challenge is the infantilization or infantilizing young men, which is a crisis. There are too many adult men not working. They're depending on their parents to provide for them. A fascinating statistic found that 1.6 billion hours were streamed on the game Fortnite last year. 90% of those playing that game were by men. Now, is this where our workforce is going? Are they men that are living with their parents and playing video games at home all day? So think about this. If we had the same work rate today as we did in the year 2000, that's just 24 years ago, we'd have 10 million more people in the workforce, and that would have contributed a projected additional $6 trillion in GDP. So what would that do to our economy? Of course, it helps the economy when more people are working, when more wealth is generated, but it also helps other areas as well. So for example, Social Security, which is projected to be in the red in 9 years. Medicare is struggling as well. If there were more people in the workforce and more wealth being generated, of course, more taxes are being paid, it would help shore up some of these social safety net programs as well. Another challenge is a crisis of contentment. We are not a content people today. We face alienation and addiction issues. We are estranged from traditional sources of contentment. If you take a look at some of the statistics today, we are facing a number of trends that are very, very troubling. The suicide rate, for example, has increased by 30% between the year 2000 and 2020. Nearly a million people have died from drug overdoses in that same time period. Think about that. A million people are not with us because of drug overdoses. In Kentucky, by the way, it's about 4 to 5 overdose deaths every day, according to last year's statistics. Between 15 to 20% of American adults use antidepressants or anxiety medication. So why is there a relatively sudden increase or decrease in our mental health and related maladies? Now, I argue, and as you've heard me say on this program, that CPC engages the issues from a biblical worldview, but I would argue that we're alienated from our Creator and the purpose and the meaning in life that our Creator gives us. When we separate ourselves from our Creator God and His purpose and plan for our life, friends, it doesn't end well. Listen to what C.S. Lewis said. A car is made to run on petrol, and it would not run properly on anything else. Now, God designed the human machine to run on Himself. He Himself is the fuel our spirits were designed to burn, or the food our spirits were designed to feed on. There is no other. What a profound insight. And I agree 100% with Lewis that God made us for Himself. David Bahnson said that faith, family, friends, and work all play a role in our happiness or in our unhappiness. Look, if you are in a highly dysfunctional family, you're not going to be happy. If you're in a job that you hate to do, you're not going to be happy there. Yet, with this said, work is systematically blamed as the source of our unhappiness. Bahnson went on to say that he, in his book, Full Time, Work and the Meaning of Life, he is arguing for the happiness of humanity. And what he's saying is that when people find their calling, when they find the job that they love to do, when they're able to put their creativity and energy and talents into whatever it is that God made for them, that they're going to be happier. And you know, statistics bear that out. Another challenge we face is a deficient theological view of work. And this begins in the church. Too many Christians believe that work is part of the curse and that it's something that you do in order or until you get to heaven. Not in order to get to heaven, but until you get to heaven. Christians see work as something you do in order to make money, in order to support Christian ministry. The problem here with this theology is that work is a pre-fall creational ordinance. Work was something God created for Adam and Eve before they ever rebelled against Him and ate that forbidden fruit. We are made to work, friends. Work is in our DNA, and it is part of being an image bearer of God. When we work, when we create, when we provide, these are things that God did. He worked, He created, He provided. And as image bearers of God, we work as well. Listen to what Genesis 1:26 through 28 says. So God created mankind in His own image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." That is part of who we are as image bearers. We were put in the garden to, first of all, to be fruitful, to increase in number, to fill the earth, and then to rule over it. That's what subduing is. Ruling over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky. God gave this good creation to us to develop it. And this is known also as the cultural mandate. David Bahnson says this, "Our work ought to be a gift that flows from our spirit, a vehicle for creating shalom, and not a substitute for real shalom." So again, when we find what we are made to do, when we use our gifts and talents, work is a gift to others. It is a joy to pursue what we're made to do, but it's also a gift to others. It's a vehicle for creating shalom. And this idea of shalom is a Hebrew term that means when everything is right. It's not just peace. Shalom means peace, but it's a peace where everything is as it should be. Well, when we find our calling, when we're working in being a gift to others, that brings shalom, a real shalom to our communities. Dorothy Sayers said this, "Work is not primarily a thing one does to live, but the thing one lives to do. It is or should be the full expression of the worker's faculties, the medium in which he offers himself to God." Now, friends, we don't hear Christians talk like this anymore, do we? Dorothy Sayers, who was a Christian writer and thinker back in the mid-20th century, said something. This is very provocative here, right? She's saying that we don't do work to live, but we have work. This is our purpose in life, essentially, is what she's saying. It is the full expression of the worker's faculties. And this is how we offer ourselves to God. Now, here's my question to you all. Do you think of your work using your gifts and talents as one way you're offering yourself to God? This is what Dorothy Sayers is saying. So we need to reclaim the idea of work. And I want to speak just for a moment to my pastor friends out there. When was the last time you gave a message on the dignity and the importance of work? Often we hear messages that talk about workaholism, working too much, work is escape, the abuse of work. But have you talked about work as a blessing? Have you talked about work as something that you are hardwired to do? Have you talked about work as this is part of what it means to be made in the image of God? Work is dignifying. Work is necessary. And it is a blessing to those around us when we're doing that thing that God has called us to do. We contribute to our families, we contribute to our communities, and we find joy in our lives as well. There is a challenge of depoliticizing the workplace. Some of you may be familiar with a group called the Human Rights Campaign. It was one of the original pro-LGBT rights groups in the country. They're still a very prominent group. But what they began doing about 3 to 4 decades ago was they were rating companies based on how LGBT-friendly they were. And they would give these companies ranks from A to F, and the companies that had A's were those that were giving domestic partner benefits, those that were somehow acknowledging homosexual rights, and those that were at the bottom of the list, they would give failing grades. And then eventually the Human Rights Campaign would begin soliciting contributions. Not only were they rating companies, but then they began to get companies to donate to their cause. Now, it's well-funded. They have a huge, huge budget. But this was the first intrusion, I would say, or one of the early intrusions. There were some other groups out there that did this, but this was an intrusion of ideology into the workplace. Now, today, we're seeing other ideology bringing itself into the workplace as well. I think of ESG policies, debanking, the canceling of business owners. We saw this in Lexington, just down the road from us here, where Blaine Adamson, the co-owner of Hands On Originals, was canceled because he had a politically incorrect view on a certain issue. Another challenge is the grievance culture that we face. There's a lot of grievance peddlers there, those who are stirring up enmity, those who are picking at old wounds. And then we have an envy culture as well. Well, it's the rich are just getting richer. It's the rich that are ripping off the poor. To broad brush an entire group of people like that is wrong. It feeds on envy. It brings about class warfare, and that's something that hurts every society that engages in that kind of a thing. So grievance culture and class enmity and class envy.
We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Hi, Richard Nelson here. There's got to be a better way to engage politics. That's why I wrote a new book focusing on how Christians can lead the way. It's called Christianity and Politics, a memoir of spiritual formation and field guide for Christians in the public arena. This is a refreshing perspective on how believers can engage the political realm, and it's available for pre-order on Amazon today. So please check it out. I think you're going to find it helpful.
If you're just joining us, you are tuned in to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here, and we're talking about the importance of work and elements of a strong and healthy economy. And I'm going to get this plug in right now. We are bringing a conference to Lexington on October the 18th. It is called Towards a Better Bluegrass, Sources of Kentucky's Economic Strength. And we're bringing in speakers from all over the country to talk about elements of a strong and healthy economy. Towards a Better Bluegrass will be again in Lexington, October the 18th. More information can be found on our website. Just go to commonwealthpolicycenter.org. The last challenge I want to focus on is, well, I might have some more here. But a major challenge is of government overstepping and getting involved in areas that are outside its scope and efficiency. And it's also government programs trapping people in dependency. So we just had the two major political parties had their national conventions. With one of the major political parties, they talked more about empowering people. They talked about moving government out of the way, less taxes, less regulation, that kind of thing. And with the other major political party, you had a message of government getting more involved, government directly interceding for people, maybe providing jobs, providing more housing, engaging in ways that the government typically has not engaged throughout most of the history of this country. So I want to talk for a moment about government programs trapping people into dependency. Now, we have safety nets here when you have vulnerable people, those who cannot find jobs or are able to work. You do have a safety net program there. However, there are many people who are trying to get out of various government programs and to provide for themselves. But the challenge is that many of them are trapped in these programs, because if they get a job and start making a little bit too much, they face losing their subsidized housing. They face losing food stamps. They could lose their health insurance. And I'm thinking of the single mom who has children that are depending on her. That is too great a risk for her to leave those essentials in her life if she's trying to leave government programs. This is something that needs to be reformed. I've just talked with a legislator about this recently. Something that I hope we can lead the way on here in Kentucky is to free people up who are in various programs so that they can work without losing other important supports that they have in their lives right now. So there was a headline in an online education journal called The 74. The headline said this: poll, Americans want next president to focus on workforce prep and hiring teachers. Now, here's the question I have for y'all. Since when do we as Americans depend on the president of the United States to focus on workforce preparation? When do we depend on a president to focus on hiring teachers, by the way? If you recall, go back to your basic civics class that you had in elementary school about the different levels of government, federalism. You have the
federal government, which the president is at the federal level. Then you have state level government and local level. These ideas of workforce prep and teachers, at the very best, it's local level. But really, ultimately, when it comes to workforce prep, isn't that something that individuals should pursue? It starts with their initiative. It starts with their decision to pursue education, whatever it is that they might feel led to go into. I don't understand how the idea that the president should focus on workforce development and education. And by the way, the idea of education, federal involvement in education, didn't happen until the Carter administration in the mid 1970s. You know, there are other nations that have federal level governments that do these things, but they're totalitarian nations. They have command economies where they determine what the needs are. And then they tell people specifically, here's what you will do. This is not the scope of a presidency in a democratic republic.
We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered why America is the most prosperous nation in history? We've certainly been blessed, but we take the conditions for prosperity for granted. That's why CPC is hosting the Toward a Better Bluegrass Conference. We've invited some of the top thinkers and leaders to speak about the sources of our economic strength. Biblical principles, America's founding framework, and individual capacity are a few issues that we'll be addressing. So please join us on October the 18th in Lexington. And for more information, go to our website, commonwealthpolicycenter.org. And we look forward to seeing you there.
So one of the challenges we face, and I'm going to pivot over here to a more positive area, is to not just simply focus on the negative. Like I've just done for the last 20 minutes, I focused on a lot of the challenges, negative things happening. But we need to cast a vision for a better future. If we want a strong, healthy, vibrant economy with higher workforce participation, with people who are more joyful, with people who are happier and well-adjusted, not dealing with the mental health issues, not dealing with addiction issues, which are real existential threats to our nation right now, we need to cast a better vision. The political left does a good job of casting a vision for their agenda. I don't largely agree with that vision for the most part, but what is the political right doing to cast a better vision for a stronger, healthier, more vibrant economy? Our vision should be of healthy and productive people who take care of themselves, healthy and productive people who take care of their families and provide for them, people who are contributing to their communities. Now, this takes individual initiative. In other words, it takes people today here using their freedom in the right way, using their freedom for good. It's not for self-indulgence. It's not for playing more Fortnite or for engaging in drugs or whatever else kind of self-indulgent, which we all have. All of these possibilities are before us, but the challenge is to use our freedom rightly. Let me share some good news on the policy front. The Kentucky State Legislature is moving us in a better financial position than it was just 8 years ago. First of all, significant work has been done to shore up our state pension system. 8 years ago, the largest pension plan in the state was about 40% funded. Today, it is about 60% funded. It's doing much better, yet there's still a lot more work to do. Kentucky has gotten more competitive with other states in that we've become a right-to-work state, and also prevailing wages have been nixed, making public projects more affordable to taxpayers. We are on track to abolish the income tax. It will likely be dropped to 3.5% in 2026. And in fact, I just learned earlier today that the very first bill in the legislature is likely to be the one that drops the income tax from 4% down to 3.5%. And by the way, for each 0.5 percentage point that the income tax is dropped, it adds $1 billion into the economy. This is because people will have more of their hard-earned dollars that are in their pockets. This is money that business owners can use to give raises to their workers. They can use it to hire more workers, and those workers will have more money in their own pockets to spend and to circulate in the economy. So dropping the income tax is a good way to see an economy improve and to flourish. Good news on the private business front. You know, we are blessed to have a free market here where if you have a vision and a dream, you can go out and start your own business. And not all businesses are the same. Some do things better than others. Some take care of their workers better than others. And I think of places like Hobby Lobby or Chick-fil-A, where they've created workplace cultures that really focus on their employees. Their employees can thrive and they pay them well. They treat them well. And you see that reflected in the overall culture of the workplace and in their ultimate service as well. So we have the freedom to go out and start our own businesses, and we have the freedom for those business owners to create a workplace that is healthy and strong and not just blesses the employees, but blesses the community as well. I'm going to close with something I brought up just a few minutes ago, and that is that the Commonwealth Policy Center is bringing a conference to Lexington. Again, it's called Towards a Better Bluegrass, Sources of Kentucky's Economic Strength. We are bringing in speakers from all over the country to talk about different areas and different elements of a healthy economy. We're bringing in former Congressman Dave Bratt, former Attorney General Daniel Cameron, State Senator Robbie Mills, Brian Dimitrovic of the Laffer Center, John Guerin, professor of economics at University of Kentucky, and a host of other speakers as well. We would love for you to join us in Lexington on October the 18th, and we're going to explore biblical principles, our founding framework, current policy, and then the importance of work in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. It's going to be a great conference. Again, great speakers lined up, great topics that we will be covering. And you can go to our website to find more and to register. Just simply go to commonwealthpolicycenter.org. And then I ask you to do this. Promote this to your network.